Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome in. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn. I'm Bob, and we are all together, the horn family. My apologies about last night. I don't know why I'm apologizing. I didn't do it. This one, I didn't break. We were subjected to another one of those malicious attacks that have been coming along periodically over the last several weeks. I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you that I think that it is somehow connected to the right wing, because the right wing are that kind of filthy, dirty trick kind of people. You know what I mean? Yeah, I thought so. No, we got taken down after an hour last night, and then John Fox and then Ben Birch worked. Ben worked his keyboard tapping fingers to the bone and made his brain cells actually sweat, trying to come up with A, why it was happening, B, how it was happening, and he and John Fox in consultation sorted all of that out, and Ben then did some things that would hopefully prevent it from happening in the future, or at least as much. So that's why the show went sideways after an hour of programming last night. And again, my sincere apologies. And my curses rain down upon little right-wing bastards who can't tolerate any form of dissent in their world. But that's how right-wingers are, aren't they? Yeah, they are. And that's just a fact. So we have made it to the end of the week. It is Friday on the front porch here on the Horn. That, of course, means, by all means, bring whatever you wish to the table this evening. Because it's just a chance to, as John's intro notes, just a little chance to cuss and discuss the end of the week. Okay? Yeah, I thought so. I was gonna make a big announcement to the chat room when we started this evening, but the only two people in there besides me are Jugapunch and our chat room moderator, Lottie. Well, I'll tell you guys. Last weekend, I tried a little experiment, and I didn't tell you till the end of the program. This weekend, I am trying a little experiment, or this Friday, I'm trying a little experiment, and we're going to see how it works out again. I have the video fired up, the video camera fired up, and we are sending to our Ustream channel, ustream.tv, and you're absolutely free to go and watch and tell me what you think. Apparently, as I'm checking the monitor here, it focuses and unfocuses itself somewhere along the way, apparently according to a plan known but to it and the Flying Spaghetti Monster. I'll have to find my way into the control panel and see if I can fix some of that. I'm creeped out by doing video. You probably know that by now. But I figure, you know, what the hell? Let's run a little experiment. Why not? What can it hurt? Yeah? And my cigar just went out. You'll have that, too. So as we go into this Friday on the front porch, you know, of course, the number for reaching the program, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid@gmail.com. And a little update, because this is Friday, And if you recall, Horn family member Darlene had offered a challenge to you all a couple of nights ago, offering to match up to $200 contributions that would come in to help us finish February on something of a positive note. I have good news. Earlier in the day, we reached and crossed over that $200 mark. So you have met Darlene's challenge, and I thank you very kindly for it. Including including what Darlene has offered to contribute as well, there is further good news. We are nearly at the end of February. The last show of February will be Monday. Monday is the 28th, if I'm not mistaken. And this is the first time I've been able to say this in a long time. We are within striking distance of making our monthly fundraising goal 2 months in a row. Because between Darlene's contribution, Darlene's match of your contributions, plus everything that has been contributed over the course of the month of February, we are only $400 away. So hopefully between tonight and the end of the show Monday night, we will have 40 people who will contribute $10 or so, or some combination thereof, and we will meet our fundraising goal for February, which will be inspiring in and of itself simply because February is a shorter month. You know, 31 days in January, only 28 in February, or is this a leap year? I don't know. I don't follow those things. But we're that close. We are that close. $400 away from making our February fundraising goal, thanks to the kindness of many of you. And I should add another thing. In going over, and I'm sorry I didn't do the actual count, but in going over the funds that we have raised over the course of the month, well, golly gee, we are getting closer and closer and closer to having an actual thrifty 250. We haven't crossed the 100 barrier yet, but we are getting very close to doing that. And that in itself is inspiring because it means that more and more people are picking up the slack and making it a more equitable means for people, for folks to be able to support the Horn. So my congratulations to you. My congratulations to you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Now, having said that, let's see, some things. I was wandering over by Crooks and Liars earlier today. You know, that's one of the go-to sites that I use in show prep. And I ran across a CNN report that had been posted by a person whose handle is Scarce. It was a report by Ben Wiedemann of CNN. And you're going to hear what is referred to in the trade as Nat Sound at the beginning of Ben Wiedemann's report. It is of a mass of humanity thousands upon thousands strong singing. Just give it a listen. Exactly. Did you hear the singing? Along with the singing, they were also swaying in unison, these peaceful protesters, these nonviolent protesters. I mentioned to you the other night that there was a writer who has for a long time advanced ideas and theories surrounding nonviolent civil disobedience, nonviolent protest. And I couldn't remember his name at the time. I got an email earlier today that reminded me. His name is Gene Sharp. He is an octogenarian who has been working on this all his life, and he is being cited in the Middle East as being in many ways the father of the tactics that they have used to topple these tyrants and these blood-soaked dictators. So I wanted to make sure that I got his name out there for you. Again, Gene Sharp. Gene Sharp. So having done that, I want to suggest something to you. Also today, I received from a listener, from our buddy Dennis in Kentucky, a link to a story at Slate called Das Kapital. That's capital with an O, like in the building. And the reporting on the sense of fellowship that has developed in Wisconsin among those occupying the Capitol there. They've given themselves a name. They call themselves the Cuddle Puddle. They were among the first to start camping out in the Capitol. There's about 10 of them. C.J. Terrell is one of them, an unofficial spokesman for the Cuddlers. C.J. Terrell said, "We were all lying down in the sleeping bags, and somebody said, 'They've got a cuddle puddle going on.' And we liked it." "We didn't know each other before this happened," Tom Bird said. Tom Bird, like Terrell, is a University of Wisconsin grad student. On Wisconsin, you know what? With all due respect to the Ohio State fans and everything out there, it'd suit me just fine if the University of Wisconsin won the Big Ten for the next 1,000 years. You know, I've talked to you a lot, just to give you a sense of the great work that comes out of that university. I've talked to you a lot about what a magnificent human being our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien is. Guess where Dr. Bill O'Brien got his PhD in history? The University of Wisconsin at Madison. Good minds come from Madison, Wisconsin. The writer of this article at Slate, David Weigel, says you can walk the halls 100 times and not lose your sense of wonder and amazement at the occupation of Wisconsin's state capitol. It's hard to admit this without it sounding like an endorsement of the pro-labor, anti-Republican stance of the protesters. It's not. It's just that things like this don't ever happen in state capitals. He notes, yeah, there have been sit-ins at state houses and one-day sit-ins to protest the Iraq War. But nothing at all like this in a very long, long time. And so a little village has grown up inside the state capitol in Madison, Wisconsin. Among other things, and this is really cool, David Weigel writes, on the second floor atrium, a crowd has parted for a 9-piece funk fusion group called VO5, performing an original song tentatively called Wisconsin Cheddar Revolution. Yeah. A table was set up in an area around Office 116N with medical supplies, aspirin, Band-Aids, feminine hygiene products, etc. They don't allow photos there. Press releases are given out handwritten on notebook paper to anyone who asks questions. And people drop off the things that are needed there. There's a safe zone for children. Because the protesters who have come to Madison have brought their children with them. Because you know what? There's no point to these demonstrations and these protests absent the children. Because it is their world that these heroes in Madison are desperately trying to prevent being screwed up beyond all recognition. There was dirty business afoot today, or early this morning, sometime in the sometime in the wee hours of the 1 o'clock hour, the state assembly, in a sort of backdoor move, held a vote open for a matter of seconds while all the Republicans voted Snot Walker's budget in the affirmative and sent it on to the Senate, where the heroes holding out there, the 14 Democrats, are the only thing standing between the governor's disgusting plan and its success. But as I said, I ran across this post at Crooks and Liars by Scarce, huge rally in Benghazi, Libya, and I pointed out to you, or, well, it's radio, how can I point anything out? But I played for you the singing of the swaying thousands there in Benghazi, Libya. You might recall a couple of nights ago I played a brand new anthem called Worldwide Rebel Song by Tom Morello, formerly of Rage Against the Machine. And he read a letter from Egypt to the protesters standing shoulder to shoulder in Madison, Wisconsin. Well, in the course of doing show prep today, when I ran across this story about the protesters in Benghazi, and I heard the singing, I scrolled on down, and I heard the original version of the song that the protesters are singing. And I have to say at the outset, Arabic is definitely not easy. The song translates as, "We will stay here." The first lines of the song are, "We will stay here." By implication, they're saying, "We will be here, Gaddafi will be gone." Well, hopefully the same thing can be said about Wisconsin Governor Snot Walker. And just because I've got one of those cranky streaks, one of those streaks of, oh, I don't know, what would you call it? Snark? You wanna see the teabaggers pee themselves? You wanna see the teabaggers and the right wingers and the anti-worker people and the Koch brothers thugs just stand there and fill their britches? Isn't that exactly what would happen if the protesters in the Capitol were to learn and to sing this?
سوف نبقى هنا كي يزول الألم سوف نحيا هنا سوف يحلو النغم سوف نبقى هنا موطني 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 ذا الإباء موطني 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 يا أنا رغم كيد العدا رغم كل النقم سوف نسعى إلى أن تعم النعم سوف نرنو إلى رفع كل الهمم للمسير للعلا ومناجاة القمم فلنقم كلنا بالدواء والقلم كلنا عفو على من يصارع السقم ولنواصل المسير نحو غاية أهم ونكون حقا خير أمة بين الأمم سوف نبقى هنا سوف نبقى هنا كي يزول الألم سوف نحيا هنا
كم سهرنا من ليالي للصباح لا ننم كم عراقيل كسرنا كم حفظنا من رزم كم جسور قد عبرنا كم ذرفنا من حمم نبتغي صيد المعاني نبتغي رأس الهرم
نقضي ساعات جوالي نستقي علم العجم نستهين كل غالي كي نحقق الحلم انسى املنا.
I don't know about you, but that's stirring, and I don't even know what they're saying. Horn Southeast correspondent Matt Osborne might be able to help in that regard a little bit, but I don't know if Matt's listening. But the opening lines are, we will stay here. And even if they couldn't sing it, if they could just play a recording of it in the Wisconsin state capitol, well, hell, they'd probably be attacked by teabaggers from Tennessee. Remember, Tennessee just introduced a law in both houses of its legislature that declares Muslims washing feet to be treason. No kidding. Declares that followers of Sharia law are enemies of the state. Yeah, no kidding. Because right-wingers are absolutely bedwet and terrified of anything. And this is a double whammy. They're absolutely terrified of anything that smacks of Islam or Arabic. And they're absolutely terrified of working people who have the guts and the determination to stand on their own hind legs and demand that they be treated as human beings ought, who reject the notion that the only people deserving of humane treatment are the Koch brothers and their filthy ilk. Anybody got any ins with the protesters in Madison? You got to drill down a little ways, because this post comes from yesterday at 8:29 a.m. on Crooks and Liars. But you really should. Somebody needs to send this along, because Snot Walker probably would call out, the National Guard over this. You hear that? They're singing that. Nah, they're singing that terrorist music. That's just gorgeous. It really, really is. It's just gorgeous. I don't have just a whole lot of music in Arabic around. I think I got one other song, and I'm probably going to play it here in a minute. You probably know what that is, don't you? Yeah. And I will. And we'll take a break. It's 23 minutes past the hour. We will go on with this Friday on the front porch. It's kind of grim and gray and cold, and we've actually had some sleet outside. So please understand that the front porch is actually closed, and we'll have to just do this in the front parlor, if that's all right by you. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid. Jump right in. The conversation's fine. That's why we call it Conversation Radio.
movement. Labor was strong and proud. My brothers and sisters hold their ground and we won't back down. If it's a war they want, then it's just what they get. Fuming cause I gotta feed my family and I'm in debt. But they can take it all, and I will stand up tall and keeping on the struggle, give them hell, that's all. In this global fight, the revolution starts tonight. When workers are united, victory is in sight. Ignore the talk, talk, and company puppets, I love it. Your propaganda only gains us the respect of the community. I swear it's meant to be. It's in my blood, generations deep. Defend this way of life, wearing my heart on my sleeve. So no contract, no peace, no layoffs, no concessions. Improve my health and safety, benefits and my pension. Just like Mr. Layton said, you picked the wrong town and you picked the wrong union. 6500, say it loud. One day longer. Destroy the lie. My back's against the wall, so what am I to do? Get up, stand up, fight the power, rage against them too. There's freedom of speech, so I will exercise mine and assemble everywhere that these corporations do crime. Explosives in our minds, ready to blow at any time. Show no mercy to these scabs that get across this picket line. When the refrigerator's bare and the bills are creeping through the door, it's desperate times, so desperate measures we explore. Marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out, lawsuits and arraignments, members under company surveillance. Public divided, either they love us or they hate us. Profit billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have took into account that we never give up. We'll be here one day longer.
A lot of truth there. Whole bunch of truth. Did you hear that one line? It's the next generation we're doing this for. That is rapper OB. His name is Mike O'Brien. His band is Kill the Autocrat and the Go Team. The song is One Day Longer. And they have that has been adopted, I am told, by David from Maine as the unofficial Wisconsin anthem. They've even invited rapper OB to come to Wisconsin this weekend. There will, of course, be solidarity rallies in, I believe, practically every state capital tomorrow. I'm going to try to attend one if possible. It's a long way away, though. It's 50 miles down the mountain to Charleston and back. I don't know. We shall see. Like I said, the lines are open if you want to jump in. Bunch of stories tonight if you don't. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
First of all... Oh, the music. Love the music. I've always loved Desert Rose, but the other ones just blew me out of the water.
Yeah, that first one just grabbed me early this morning, so it kind of had to be on the show tonight. There was no getting around it.
Yeah, and then that rap just... Okay. A little piece of news about one of those rallies.
Okay.
I started working phones again today.
Mm-hmm.
Called up my state representative of all things. Hey, I'm young. I'm working everybody. And I wanted to know how come he hadn't made a statement. And the lady I talked to said, well, he's going to be making a statement tomorrow down at the rally in support of all of the workers.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And tell us again, who is your representative?
His name is Representative Brad Witt. He is my local state representative here in Oregon. Call your state representatives, people. Get on them.
Well, I know the one in Charleston is scheduled for noon tomorrow, down rallying around the Statue of Lincoln on the Kanawha River side of the Capitol. It's a beautiful sight, and if I can get down there at all, I will be down there.
Yeah, and you know, and then keep going after your Congress critters, because they should be, especially if they're Democrats.
Well, particularly if they're Democrats, yes.
And technically, I hate to admit this, but technically, Oregon is a right-to-work state.
Is it really? I had no idea.
Technically, it is. This state is so loaded with union people, it's not funny. It was another one of those deals where basically the Democrats didn't bother to show up at the polls. And a bunch of fanatics, you know, did their thing. And that was how it got through.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like what happened in the Wisconsin State House shortly after midnight. Again, proving that the right wing cannot advance their agenda without dirty tricks and skullduggery.
Exactly. But the thing is, even if you live in a right-to-work state, that doesn't mean that you don't have people who aren't going to back these people. And, hey, when it gets to the point when you have people in Idaho demonstrating for jobs, for workers' rights, give me a break. Idaho is so conservative.
Well, I mean, we know that there are sane people in Idaho. We're just... Given this lie that everybody is just right wing and polygamous there.
Well, they may not be polygamous, but 99% of them are right wing. I used to live in Idaho. I mean, you want to talk about redneck heaven? I can tell you horror stories and make your hair curl. The liberals. There are no liberals in Idaho. The, quote, progressives or the moderates in Idaho, if they feel strongly enough about this to demonstrate, this is a real big-time movement then.
Well, you know, as I noted, I think they're slated for every state capital in the country. And to the extent that you mention Idaho, I can't help thinking about Montgomery, Alabama and Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah.
That's got to scare the Trent Lotts and the Haley Barbers, and the Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Hoods, half out of their cracker skins.
Well, in a way, I would expect more of someplace like Mississippi, because they are so oppressed. Because maybe some of the people down there would take a look around and say, "Hey, this is our shot."
Yeah, now or never.
Yeah,
my only beef with that rap I played a minute ago is that one line, if it's a war they want, it's a war they'll get. I still have real problems with our side using eliminationist language, Susan.
Yeah. Now, if they want a war, words, sure. Well, yeah, I can do words till doomsday, you know. Hey, have at it. I can talk forever.
But I also understand that people's very lives are being screwed with under these circumstances, and it's hard to avoid that kind of thing. You got to wonder, Susan. You got to wonder how who's this creep? The majority leader of the Wisconsin Senate His name is Fitzgerald.
Yeah, the one whose brother's the...
His wife is among those who, as a direct and proximate result of Snotwalker's actions, has received layoff notices.
Yeah. Me, I call him Governor Wanker.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, it's very kindergarten, very first grade, but it's hard not to call him Snotwalker. Because that's what he is. He's a little walking puddle of phlegm.
He's a dweeb.
What's the line from The Breakfast Club? A neo-maxi-zoom dweeby.
he's the walking example of a dweeb. I mean, he's just...
This one's a pencil neck, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, am I the only person around who thinks he dyes his hair?
Oh, only his hairdresser will tell.
I'm sorry. I'm being really, really snotty, but I really...
Well, you know, he's got that Reagan fetish, so maybe he wants to be an old dye job grease ball like Reagan was. No aspersions on anybody who dyes their hair, of course, but...
I got news for that guy. Reagan was a rotten president. I can remember saying before the 1980 election, God help this country, if Reagan gets in. And I was really unhappy to be proven right.
Yeah, we're toast.
Yeah, we're toast.
Nothing's ever been the same.
Nope. And, you know, he's a dweeb. He's the guy that was getting noogies from all the jocks.
Probably, yeah. Exactly. Well, I think that there are a bunch of other things in the stack. I wanted to start off with Wisconsin, though, and that sort of conjunction with the singers in Libya. That was just too much. What?
Yeah. Did you hear about what the governor of, I think it was Maryland, said?
No.
It was Maryland or one of the smaller states from back east. They had a governor's meeting. And he was, when they came out, he was asked about what was going on with the aliens. He basically said, we can't be bothered with this kind of a distraction.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Indeed. Indeed. I saw some photographs. Is your blanketing of snow already gone, or is it still on the ground?
We got 2 inches originally here where I live. Then came a good inch of hail.
That's always
really
fun.
Heavy hail. And then came another 3 inches on top of that. And it's still sitting there.
And it's still right cold then.
Oh, yeah. And it's slickered and...
Well, it's not on a doorknob, yes.
Yeah. I'm staying home. I'm not going outside.
Stay home. Stay in. As long as you got some canned goods, you're in okay shape.
Well, it's not necessarily canned goods, but I got a freezer and I'm...
Well, there you go.
Stay home and just...
And just remember, where you're concerned, this all ends fairly soon. Right? I mean, March, don't you start getting April?
Well, that's the way it used to work, but that was before these idiots started inducing climate change.
Well, true enough.
God knows what's going to happen. How?
Yeah, true, true. it started sleeting here this evening, and we haven't seen snow in a while. Oh, damn. Oh, I hate it. I was cursing individual little flecks of sleet. You, and you, and you too.
give me snow any day. I'll take snow over sleet any day because we get here what's known as a silver thaw. And what happens is you get it sleet and you end up with a half inch of ice all over literally everything.
Oh, and I saw footage from Seattle. That must have been a little bit ugly, too.
Oh, yeah, because of those nice hills.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Susan, have yourself a wonderful weekend. Stay inside and stay warm.
Well, give my love to everybody, and stay inside yourself. You don't want to mess around with ice. It's bad.
No. Will do. You take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, what happened to you yesterday?
I think the Koch brothers got us. No, I'm not kidding. John Fox was telling me the instant that I said Koch brothers, the stream went done.
Yeah, anyway, I just thought, oh, God, okay.
Yeah, we got whacked in a big way, but I think Ben Birch has finally found the secret of it all. And may have put in some fixes that perhaps will keep it from happening. So far, the stream has held out nicely, and that's even with me running the audio stream and Ustream at the same time.
Hey, so did you manage to look at that? Or did you get that graph that I sent you?
Yes, I did.
I mean, the graph is a graph of the number of strikes. Of workers, of 1,000 or more workers, and but it starts from 1947 and it goes to 2007, and literally it goes from 500 strikes in 1940 or maybe 1952 to literally zero in 2007, and it's just, I mean, it's a really powerful graph. I mean, and the reason why I bring it up is because I think that one of the problems with, was that Susan you were talking to?
Yes.
When she was saying what the governor of Maryland said or whatever.
Right.
Is that like in Egypt and all these other sort of revolutions or whatever you want to call them, it's against this neoliberalism. You see, it's not against but political issues per se, and you know the Soviet Union totalitarianism, but it's another dystopic philosophy too. And this is the thing that people can't wrap their head around in this country because the elites have too much to lose. And I think that you know we were talking about comparing it to 89 or 79, you know, these other sort of hiccups in the world. But I think that this has the potential, to just be massive because it's attacking, you know, Tina, you know, Thatcher's.
There is no alternative, right?
Alternative. And so, if it's attacking Tina, well, what the fuck, you know? What's the alternative? You see, I mean, I just think that.
Well, and I remember sitting down at the Brushy Fork Institute last September down in Kentucky. And we had a lecture, a presentation about Tina, and the guy talking to us was not pro-Tina, because Brushy Fork is all about empowering local communities, and he introduced us to Lois. And Lois is locally owned income substitution.
Right.
Where you foster small business instead of all these stupid tax giveaways for corporations that move away as soon as the tax giveaways wear off. And you're right though, because the other side doesn't have it's definitional inside Tina, isn't it, Sandra? There is no alternative.
Well, no, but that's the thing that's really disturbing though. I mean, and it, you know, I've been sort of reading different commentators out of the Middle East. Obviously, you want to go to the source, and many of them are commenting on the economic issue and the fear that the magic of the marketplace is going to rear its ugly head and substitute more neoliberalism in Egypt, for example. Because, see,
well, Egypt is by no means out of the woods.
Well, no, and that's the problem, though. But see, our media is so wedded to the neoliberalism. You know, this, I just think that this is so much more volatile and problematic for us people in the world, because people are convulsing against the inherent unfairness of this system. It's so unfair and so distorts societies, you know, and now we're seeing, you know, we're being told all kinds of BS, but it's all lies. I mean, the reason that people are freaking out is in 2008, you had a major meltdown. That shit was for real.
And nobody during the meltdown could quite bring themselves to say 1929, could they?
Well, right. And the thing is, all that's followed since is a direct result of the bankruptcy of neoliberalism. Now, obviously, I'm not going to go back to any kind of command type of economy or totalitarianism.
Right. Nobody wants a five-year tractor plan.
Yeah, I don't want the government making television sets. You understand what I'm saying? And I don't appreciate being accused of that either. You know, when they throw
Yeah.
It's bullshit. And I'm not talking like that. And anyone who knows anything understands that certain markets should be created for certain needs of the society, not that the market is the fucking society. This is the problem.
Well, there's tonight's toaster moment so far. It is not the society. It's an element of it. And I think you just kind of breezed into that, Sandra, but I think there's a hell of a lot of truth there that deserves to be driven home.
No, and it's not here because, you know, people seem to forget that the economy is man-made. Can I say it again? The economy is man-fucking-made. You know, it's not from osmosis. And that's the big problem in our society is the small d somehow has been morphed into big C. And it's just like, hello? It's an anathema, the kind of capitalism that has to flourish for the inequalities to exist.
But I do go back to this ongoing analysis or non-analysis, because there's not very many people talking about it, that I still maintain, and this is only because I'm a geek, that what's going on, the globalism, the Tina, what have you, ain't capitalism. I've been saying it for several years now, and I'm sticking my guns on it. Because at least it's not capitalism as was contemplated by capitalism's inventor.
No, but it is capitalism for the poor that are being subjected to.
We take the losses.
No, and we also are the ones operating in this magic market, which is why it's such a failure. Because the elites and the people who are selling off state-owned enterprises to each other, they don't operate under those rules. It's totally stacked in their favor, which is why societies are so distorted, okay? And you know what? Bless you for bringing up Gene Sharp. I'm like, hello? He wrote this From Dictatorship to Democracy.
Yeah, that's
it's
the book.
It's a camp. It's not that big. I think it's like 120 pages. And it, you know, lays out the idea of power. You know,
How is it that while Glenn, and this is kind of off topic, but I just have to ask, how is it that while Glenn Beck and the rest of those little thugs over on Radio Rwanda, how is it that because, you know, they got their hands on Saul Alinsky and Rules for Radicals and wet their pants and chewed their toenails and did what right wingers do? How did this guy blow under their radar and still manage to upset the an entire segment of the planet?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'm not too sure why this man is sort of locked out of the discussions about democratic transformation. I mean, because the pamphlet...
Is it because neither Barack Obama nor Hillary Clinton ever mentioned it as being an influence on their lives?
Well, you remember how Noam Chomsky shot to the number one list when our pal Hugo mentioned him. So
yep.
Maybe Hugo should mention this one, although this might be a little bit too close to home, though.
Yeah, he may not want to do that.
He may not want to talk about Gene Sharp. But, no, that's because Gene Sharp is too damn close to home for here, too. Because if we look at the formations here, it's not a cabal. It's a tyranny, an dictatorship. I keep saying that because, you know, Americans need to realize that the political economy is all the same now. And what we see going on is the fact that our government, which has the power to tax, is not using that state power the way it should be.
With that in mind, I'm going to shift gears on you just a minute, Sandra, because the taxation has to be central to all of this, because there's not one of these states or municipalities or anybody who is experiencing these problems where there's no solution. It's just that the for-profit media is telling us that the only solution is are these god-awful austerity measures that are borne by working people on their broken backs.
No, but see, the thing that's really is so disturbing to me is that how in the world are these people able to look at anyone in a straight face after this, oh, we must not raise, we must continue to Bush taxes? See, that's the thing which I think is also propelling people to hit the streets on some level. Anybody can make the connection right now, Bob, that, oh, wait a minute, they keep giving away the money to these rich people, but they're telling us what? I think a lot of people are maybe making that connection now. And also,
well, and that was my point. If they're not making the connection, Sandra, the connection is going to, by God, be made for them.
Well, yeah,
have you seen this story out of Philly?
What, the kids that died in the fire?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Last year, we for a week, I think, we talked about off and on this man whose fire department watched his home burn down.
Right. And cats and dogs died in that.
Right. But no people. And if I recall correctly, a number of us said, this isn't the end of it. This is not an isolated incident. And yes, people are going to die.
And that was when the crunchy thing was written.
Yeah, that was the crunchy. Right. That was the crunchy moment.
Right.
And so this story breaks about Philadelphia, where budget cuts, the way the city government has responded to it is to curtail fire services, not by laying everybody off, but by browning out various fire stations given the day of the week. Now, the Philadelphia Fire Commissioner is a guy named Lloyd Ayers, and he said, Philadelphia will continue to respond to your call and tend to any and every emergency that may arise in an urgent and timely manner. But they didn't. Now, bear in mind, the union firefighters said this is going to be trouble.
Right, exactly.
So in the Olney section of Philadelphia, on Tuesday, a fire broke out in a row house, and the closest fire station that operates Engine 61 was closed that day.
Right.
So Engine 51, stationed further away from the site, was dispatched to handle the fire. But because the nearest station couldn't respond, they wound up bringing the charred remains of two little children from the ruins of the home. Now, you know, the first inclination of, I think, any human being, Sandra, is to start screaming. But if we are calm and reasoned about this, at least as much as may possibly be done, I don't see any way that we don't look at every, well, you know, first of all, let's go knock on Grover Norquist's door. And let's knock on every tax-cutting Republican's door out there, and let us carry those two little charred bodies to every Republican door and say, you have ownership of this. Because this is theirs, Sandra, isn't it?
It's incredible, but don't forget, I keep, you know, this is the back of my mind, too, that Pew Research where they do the survey, and every American, they don't want any taxes, but they still want the services. That disconnect must also play into this.
But it's a level of cognitive dissonance that cannot be maintained.
No, but it's deadly. Yeah, this is the thing.
It certainly is.
And so it's on the Republicans, but it's also that disconnect is a problem because the propaganda has been so thick and thorough that people are actually walking around thinking that society can operate without taxation. Now, I want the monopoly of violence to be with the state, not with corporations and not with political parties. I mean, it's shifting.
Yeah.
If the people can't be taken care of.
But by the same token, how do you break that cognitive dissonance? I mean we all know about NIMBY, you know, not in my backyard. And how nothing is real until it happens to you. But these things happen individually. There's very likely not going to be a great fire of Philadelphia or a great fire of Chicago. Now, we had Katrina and everything that was attendant upon the Army Corps' failure to deal with the levees down there. And that was massive disaster. We have fires in Southern California. We have earthquakes. We have things like that. But at some point in time, hard questions have got to be asked, you know, not of poor people. Because, you know, poor people pay a higher proportionate amount of their income as it is by virtue of regressive taxation. The questions have got to be asked of America's well-to-do.
Oh, no, it's too much. I mean, it's you know, it just shows that this is a plutocracy. It has to be, because there's no way that would stand. And that reminds me, I don't know if you've seen this, but I'm so sick to death of this show, this secret millionaire shit. Have you seen after this?
I've heard of this.
My God.
Help me. Help me. I'll hate this.
No, it's a show about... This is about versus America's millionaires. First of all, that statement alone will make you feel queasy. But the killer statement is they're going to secretly go into these communities and decide people who are deserving. They actually use the language deserving.
Dear God, this is straight out of Mark Twain.
Right. And they're going to shower these people who are deserving of some little money.
This is the man who corrupted Hadleyburg.
It's just, I mean, you got to see the ad, because I'm thinking, is this some sort of bad joke? Dickens? I don't know what the hell we're slipping into. But I'm now going to have to be entertained by looking at some rich fucks. They might as well
making ordinary people jump through hoops.
They might as well be throwing dimes at people like J.P. Morgan or whatever.
Yeah, wasn't that Rockefeller?
That. One of them people who did that,
yeah.
And people are going to be out there selling pencils and apples. I mean, what's happening? God, you got to see the ad. I just was sort of...
Oh, I will. And somebody will send me the link to it post-haste, yeah. I'm sure.
You know, I was just gobsmacked because, of course, all the people they're helping are, like, you know, straight-up poor-looking minorities. And this one guy is going, yes, you know, just... it's just... Oh, I can't even talk straight because it makes me sick. Because some sort of yes, a Boston type of behavior.
Oh.
Oh, God, it's terrible. But the point is that this is like my worst nightmare, right?
Yeah.
To be sort of looking and living in a society where it's all run by the rich and.
Oh, it's,
I mean, at the
it's
moment,
all fun.
Sort of,
it's a sort of hybrid between Thunderdome and Rollerball.
Yeah, I don't know what, but it's really disturbing to me, you know. And I've just been reading about, you know, marketing for nonprofits and the sort of hyper competitive environment it is now. You know, where you have to turn yourself inside out to get those funds, and with the changing in tax laws. Yeah, it's on and on. So it's at every level, Bob, this sort of...
I keep coming back to this cognitive dissonance, this disconnect, whatever we care to call it. Because, you know, when something god-awful like this happens in the Middle East, they put the little 9-year-old's body and the little 7-year-old's body in a casket, and they carry it through crowds of thousands and thousands of people.
All over the place.
And frankly... I know as, you know, as Westerners, maybe we're a little put off by that. But you know what? Maybe it's time we start doing it.
Well, wasn't that the thing that, who's the black boy that was beat to death?
Oh, Emmett Till?
Yeah, that's what his
yeah,
mother...
Yeah, his mama that's, put on an open casket funeral in Chicago
exactly.
Because she said, I want people to see what was
Thank
done to
you.
My boy.
And no one's going to tell me that whole incident did not lend huge, huge credence to the exploding civil rights movement. So, you're
see,
right.
I read this earlier today, and I brought this up. I mean, this is kind of tactical, but I brought this up in conversation with you because I didn't want to be by myself on the air when I did this story and just start screaming obscenities, okay?
Well, no.
Because I want this to have some meaning. But the fact of the matter is, Sandra, my God in heaven, 7 years old and 9 years old and rich. And look, I just say it. Rich people burned them to death. I don't ever, the next time I hear some godforsaken Republican telling me about how his taxes is too high, I'm going to say, are your taxes too high to allow a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old not to burn to death?
Well, the thing is, and we're still being told that, you know, we have to keep the taxes low for the job creators. And it's a lie. They're not creating jobs. This
no, hell no. And there ain't going to be no job for them two little girls.
Oh, my God. No. It is. It's really an outrage. And, I mean, yeah. What's the commentating from the politicians in Philadelphia today? Silence?
Well, bless their hearts, Firefighters Local Union 22 went down to the scene of the fire and put on a demonstration.
Yeah, but they had made it clear that they disagreed with the policy before it happened, right?
Yes, they had.
Okay.
And they said problems are going to happen.
Shit. As opposed to, yeah. Oh, my God, no.
Because Engine 61 would have been on the scene in half the time that Engine 51 was.
No, but all this is necessary because...
Well, because our betters can't, by God, pay taxes. Because,
okay.
Remember, you know, municipal funds and state funds and sharing and revenue sharing and matching funds and all of that stuff, this is stuff that flows downhill from Washington. And because it isn't getting to Washington in the first place, because we got to have us some tax cuts, that means it's not there to get from Washington to a borough in Philly. And this is twice now. This is twice now, Sandra. That we've got Republican policies that have led to the simple fact of 9-year-olds not getting to become 10-year-olds. And I'm sick of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, it's just an outrage, especially when you know why. And we do. In the meanwhile, we still have to look at that fat fuck, Christie, on every damn newspaper. You know, I'm sick of these papers doing softball pieces on these pigs every damn day.
Yeah, and that was my original point. All you hear from the for-profit media is that, you know, we've, and I mean, everybody, it's talked about on MSNBC, it's talked about on CNN, and nobody is out there saying all this austerity crap is exactly that. It's crap. It takes taxes to run a successful country.
No, it's just incredible. That all that is just being celebrated,
remember, Pennsylvania has a brand spanking new right wing jackass of a governor too.
Yeah, no, I know, it's incredible. I mean, and you know what happened to which I mean, I sort of am not interested in Obama chiming in. Forget him, like I said before. But it's interesting that people are bringing up that that comment he made when he was running about he'll put on some comfortable shoes.
And get out there and march?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, how's that tasting? Damn, it must be scrambling. Have you seen any fallout from that?
No fallout, just a lot of people. And I guess, I don't know where he found the courage to do it, but I guess Ed Schultz just wore him out on the air last night and said, get thy ass to Wisconsin.
Now, listen, you know, I have my issue with old Ed Schultz, but I got to give him props. That fool been on this shit nonstop.
Yeah.
Day in and day out. So, you know, I'll give them props for that. You know, because these people are hard pressed to, you know,
But see, the Obama administration made one meek little statement. President Obama made one meek little statement, and the entire Republican message machine, the entire the slime sewer, the filth generator, cranked into sweat condition alpha overdrive and said, oh, the president needs to stop meddling in the local affairs of Wisconsin. And he shut up.
No, that's the thing, though, that's interesting, though, that he shut up, though, as per usual. But also, their third way. So their loyalties are divided. You never know which way they're going to come out. So I think that Obama's going to have to get some real comfortable shoes for all that dancing he's going to have to do next year to try to convince God knows what constituency.
Wouldn't it, but honest to God, Sandra, wouldn't it be just a hell of a lot easier to go out there and stand with them and say, I'm here because Harry Truman would have been here. I'm here because Jack Kennedy would have been here. I'm here because Lyndon Johnson would have been here. I'm here. How hard is that? He's got a legacy that he can call upon for the love of Christ.
No, it's so bizarre. But I don't know. I mean, those people who are out there protesting, they realize that this is a direct assault on their purchasing power, their ability to earn, to live. So, you know, his sort of reticence is just whatever.
Well, I do have a question. I have a labor law question here, and you may not have the answer, and I know I don't. And that is this. If, as it was promised, the Employee Free Choice Act had been passed, would this issue of eliminating collective bargaining on the part of state workers even have been able to be an issue? Do you see what I'm asking?
Well, I think they have to repeal.
You'd have to go back to the National Labor Relations Act. That's the Wagner Act.
Which act made it so that you can have the right to work? Wasn't that Taft?
Oh yeah, that's Taft-Hartley. Yeah, that's.
I think that. Eliminating that would, you know,
go along. Sure.
I don't know. I know that the right for state workers to unionize was what granted in 59 in Wisconsin, was it?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a generation.
It's been a half a century. I guess that, you know, just taking that law, that right away, is what's going on, you know? I mean, what are they waiting for? Trying to get these senators to come back?
Well, they can't move without them. This thing passed the Wisconsin House in the still of the night last night.
I heard about that. But, I mean, is it sort of are people sort of conceding that it's going to pass now? Or
No. I don't think, there's no concession at all. But now, this is a very tenuous thread. If 14 senators, and if even one of them breaks, even one, because all it takes in the Wisconsin Senate is 20 to form a quorum.
Right.
And they've got 19 right now. The Wisconsin State Senate breaks out 19 to 14.
Okay, so when you say just one, that means they actually physically have to be in the House, right?
Yeah, they got
to
be there. That's what all that business when Snot Walker was being coked the other night with the prank phone call, that's what all of that was about, that, you know, he would lure them back and trick them into coming back into Wisconsin, because if they are within the territorial confines of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin State Police is empowered to take them into custody and forcibly drag them into the Senate.
It sounds like those people are hella unified, though. In fact, because they know what the different tricks are now, courtesy of that idiot in his phone call, right?
Yeah, I mean, he tipped his hand entirely.
Yeah. Okay. So this is just a.
But the question is, I mean, these are little, and they're Democrats, so most of them aren't rich in the first place, at least not as rich as Republicans, and they're hanging out in Chicago. Where are they living?
I know, but I'm sorry. I think that you know, Move On or one of these groups with the, with you, you know, with the Citizens United, money should be able to flow to them any kind of way.
You would think, but I don't think it works that way for us, because remember, you know, we're all you always have to deal with IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican, you know, not so much if you're a Democrat. That's why Walker was talking about how, you know, I'm looking into some whether these are some ethics violations and some felonies may be being committed.
Yeah. Well, okay, so now it's just a war of attrition, as they say. Is that what's going on?
No, it's a blinking contest or a staring contest, and we'll see who blinks. And, you know, Walker says he ain't gonna.
But one thing that's interesting that's come out of it, though, is that some of these other fascists have sort of backed off a bit. I heard the one guy, is it in Indiana, said...
Well, he flipped. He waffled.
Yeah, okay, but they're not going to be trying to destroy collective bargaining. And did you hear about that felon in Florida? He believes that workers should be able to bargain. So, I mean, yeah, I thought that was interesting coming from the felon.
Well, no kidding.
I was like, huh?
But I also think that he knows that he's got a potentially... I mean, we're talking about Wisconsin here, right, Sandra? If a Wisconsinite, and I'm overgeneralizing, but if a Wisconsinite's really mad at you, he'll say something like, "Gosh, I'm really mad at you." It's not like Florida, where there's, you know, lots of high pitched screaming when people get upset. And Wisconsin Wisconsin doesn't have gun laws that allow you to shoot anybody who makes you nervous.
Yeah, no. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. Good point. I don't know. I'm just sort of, I just don't know where it's going, but I really just think that comment you made about people are going to have to respond just because the attack is so fierce. You know, I think that's really true.
I don't know how you don't.
And it ties into, you know, my theory about the sort of clash of liberty and this sort of economic tyranny.
That's the funny thing. Others have noted it as well, Sandra. This ought to be a no-brainer for the teabaggers. But then again, the teabaggers are no-brainers. Because we are, as you just noted, talking about questions of essential liberty. There's nothing more essential than the freedom of association and collective bargaining and unions are the ultimate expression of that freedom of association.
No, but see, the Koch brothers and those types look at that as negative freedoms. That you know, so...
Yeah, those are freedoms that we don't need.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, the idea of freedom is obviously in the eye, okay?
Yeah.
In the eye of whoever has the most money, from the looks of it.
Well, no, I mean, it's all Orwell, and it's all Animal Farm, and it's all some pigs are more equal than other pigs, right?
Yeah, I should let you go, but I have to say, I was completely blown away by that article that Malloy was talking about with the Koch brothers and their connections to Stalin. Why am I not surprised? Isn't it always the case with these, you know, industrialists, you know, from the German ones, to the Bush family, to these bastards? They're all hooked up with the most vicious of political systems, aren't they?
Without fail. Without
incredible.
Fail. You know, look at the story about Roger Ailes that's out.
Oh.
You know, here's this guy suborning perjury.
Listen, I know this is...
If Sandra did that, Sandra would have already been indicted along with the ham sandwich.
Oh, no, but... I have to say, is that guy, he is so ugly. Fuck.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, actually, he is ugly as.
God. I mean, I'm just looking at these people and thinking, oh, dear God. You know, it's like Rush. I mean, they're just so they're just unappealing across the board. But, yeah, so he had that woman lie, right, to protect Rudolph?
To protect Rudy ultimately, but, you know, Bernie Kerik as well.
Listen, that poor bitch was playing with some fucking scary ass folks.
Oh yes, she was.
She ought to be touching wood for her ass to be alive. You know, every time I hear from her some new horror story with the kind of really scary men she was doing, She might want to take a break.
Yeah, the Sex in the City, it wasn't. You know, you can just see those four women getting together with that poor woman from Regnery, and, well, never mind the monoloblonics. I've got a date with a skinhead thug.
Oh God! Well, at least Mr. Big was a little bit more attractive. Thank you.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Anyway, no, but I don't even want to start getting into the sort of fugly and their sort of sex capades that must go on. But,
well, when Republicans are doing it, you can guarantee that it usually involves, you know, small non-consenting animals, the costumes, the 17th century, the torture devices. I mean,
and Craigslist.
And Craigslist. Now, I went and read that the Stalin story. I got to go and read it again. Jim mentioned that briefly a couple of nights ago. And it never comes as any sort of a surprise because I think Rick Goodner, a horn psychotherapist, could probably give me the word for it that actually applies. Is it transference where we accuse the other side of being what it is we actually are? Well, that's the way it is with the right wing. They talk about being America haters. They're the ones who, us being America haters, they're the ones who are trying to tear America down. They accuse us of being communists. They're the ones whose daddy did business with Stalin.
Well, and to me, it just goes to show that the East Indian model, it just goes on. It just goes on through the centuries, on and on and on and on.
But someday it has to. It's not going to just burp or hiccup. Someday it's going to wind up in ashes, isn't it, Sandra?
Well, listen. I mean, the thing that's really scary now is the whole eco aspect of it, and how the whole goddamn planet is at risk behind this shit. You know?
Well, exactly.
Anyway,
exactly.
You know, I wish I had a little sports story to end our conversation, but I've been out of the loop.
Well, I kind of have been too. I'm in a pretty grim place with my Mountaineers. It's dodgy as to whether or not they'll make the tournament, and then that's going to ruin March for me if I don't have the Mountaineers to follow for a couple of weeks.
Oh no! I haven't even got to scratch with the basketball. I mean, is Duke in the same position again?
If Duke was 2-17, they'd at least get a 2 seed. Somewhere during the tournament, just because that ferret-faced little freak would come and, you know, chew on the selection committee.
The only other sports story, I mean, unfortunately at my job, I was stuck and my eyes were burning because I had to watch a lacrosse match between Duke and Notre Dame. Can you imagine?
Oh. If you're down to watching lacrosse, you're in a bad place, Sandra.
My eyes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, okay. But then there was the triumphant return of Carmelo Anthony to Madison Square Garden, and you would think that no one had ever played basketball before in the world.
Well, no, but didn't that bitch shoot about 1,000 times to get 27 points?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, damn, pass the ball, Carmelo.
who was it, the New York Jets wide receiver a decade or so ago penned that one book, Give Me the Damn Ball?
Well, you shouldn't expect anything less from the Dolan family, that fucking inheritance trust fund twit. He couldn't run nothing, the state of it. I'm sure, what's that pig that worked for New York forever? The sexual harasser, Isaiah.
Yeah.
Isaiah, I'm sure that fool had some input. Yeah. You know, coming from Florida,
yeah.
That organization is foul. But anyway,
and they, you know, they've become in New York sports a name for being put upon. And I heard, I guess it was Donnie Deutsch the other morning on Morning Joe talking about how Knicks fans are the most hardcore in all of New York sports. But you know, God, it's just a damn trade. It's not the second coming.
But the
way the sports media covers it, it's like all of sports stopped to find out what Carmelo Anthony would do on his first night back with the Knicks.
Well, the Knicks though, that's the same organization that's like proposing suspended bridges above the basketball so people can see, watch it from above. Can you imagine that idea?
I'm surprised. Frankly, the only thing that surprises me out of that is that Jerry Jones didn't get to it first.
Well, I'm just saying that.
And by the way, yeah, the book was Throw Me the Damn Ball, as Marty says, by one Keyshawn Johnson from the University for Spoiled Children.
Shut the hell up. Now, that's hilarious. But anyway, the Carmelo trade, it's like, dude, I was laughing because the Russians didn't get him. You know, the owner from the Nets.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that grabbed me was I caught, Tuesday, I guess, maybe, when I went to pick Agnes up from the grandbaby's house, and I got to listen to NPR on the way over to Dripley, West Virginia, and I heard Frank DeFord opining, and you know, this took some guts, and I'm sure that some right-wing member of Congress has already introduced a bill. Oh, wait, they already introduced a bill to defund NPR. He actually asked on terrestrial radio, which I thought took guts, why is it that we reserve the Star Spangled Banner for sporting events, but he said, can you imagine having to stand for the Star Spangled Banner before a production of Hamlet, or before you sit down to watch a movie, or anything? No, it's all sporting events. And he just asked a very good question, and that was this. He said, I guess the Army's going to keep, and Jim mentioned this too, the Army's going to keep their NASCAR, because somebody tried to strike that in all this budget business going on in the Republican House. Somebody actually got up and tried to eliminate the Pentagon's $9 million a year that they spend on sponsoring a NASCAR that chases everybody else every year. And, of course, the Army gets to keep doing that. But Frank DeFord did ask Sandra, he said, can we at least eliminate the jets going over the stadium? Because that stuff does cost a lot of money. I mean, there's a statistic out there for how much it costs to keep one fighter jet in the air 1 minute. And every time you turn around, there's a jet flying over a stadium somewhere. And if we're talking about the frivolous waste of money, maybe that would be a nice place to start stopping.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. When you were mentioning all that, what popped in my mind was Seneca the Stoic and his opinions about spectacle. But I'll save that for another.
Well, now I'm going to have to go and put Seneca's. I'm going to have to go put Seneca on the Kindle. You see what you're doing to me now?
Yeah. Wait.
I'm just a little Kindle freak.
That's right. Well, yeah. You just look that up because he has some interesting things to say about the people who went to spectacles. Basically, it all boiled down to, oh my God, I need to take a shower every time I view any of these or any of this. But anyway.
Nothing changes, Sandra. Have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, you too.
Later. Bye now. And let's see. Let's keep it all rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Yo, hello.
That's you. Is that you, Bob?
That's me, yes.
Oh, God, I can't tell. That you're on my phone, damn it. How you doing? It's Clayton.
Oh, hey, Clayton. What's up, man?
I had a couple of thoughts. Imagine that.
Share both of them.
Ah, first of all, let's talk about your Kindle. Are you using it?
Oh, religiously.
There are over 100, maybe 200 books on Rome and ancient civilizations.
Hey, well, I know that there's over 100,000 e-books that I can get free. Our buddy Phase 5 from the chat room shot me a note last night saying, by the way, you do know that Project Gutenberg works with Kindle. I went, holy crap.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I ran over and downloaded Dio Cassius's Roman history.
Dio Cassi?
Dio Cassius.
Don't know him.
D-I-O-C-A-S-S-I-U-S. He was a Greek historian, and he was fairly dispassionate and fairly objective.
Really? One of the things that I was thinking tonight was regarding the economic situation that we're in. That was the downfall of Rome. Inflation, deflation.
Yeah.
Cheating the amount of gold and silver in their coins.
Debasing the currency.
And the imbalance in their taxing situation.
Yeah.
Because they had these weird tax farmers to go out and decide how much tax you owed.
Right. We talked. No, we talked about one night. Rather than and you know it's a model really, Clayton. The Roman method is it's a model of what the right wing I'm sure would love to do, because the Roman Senate could not be bothered to dirty its precious patrician hands on collecting taxes for the Republic. So instead, they hired what we would call the private sector, and said,
right.
and then the way they figured out what the taxes would be is the tax farmers would bid in a certain amount that they pledged to collect in a given province, and they would bid it in such a way as to include their profit margin within the taxes, and then the Senate would select the bidder.
What would we call that these days? It might be outsourcing.
The actual phrase remains tax farming, and there have been, we talked about it maybe a couple of months ago on the program, there are elements of it creeping into American society.
Exactly, because the government's trying to get the IRS out into a private sector collectors.
Well, but where it's really starting is on the state level, Clayton, with property tax collectors. And Florida, for instance, and I believe Texas and maybe Maryland and a few other states have started hiring these tax farming outfits to go and collect taxes. And there are horrible, egregious stories of where, for instance, a taxpayer would owe $50, but the tax farming collector would say, no, that's $500 now because my fee's in there. And guess what? If you follow the trail of these tax farmers, you wind up at Citibank and Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase and that filthy crowd.
I worked once at J.P. Morgan Chase when it was Bank One here in Ohio. And in my opinion, my experience, it wasn't good. They were ripped off and they were ripping off. And right now I've had some real problems with banks, too, because there for a while I had some credit cards. Never hardly used them because I don't trust them. But I used it just in case there was an emergency. All of a sudden I got a letter in the mail saying, we're canceling your credit card. Now, you have to understand that my credit card was at like 2.5%, 3.5%. And the reason we're canceling this credit card is because you don't have good credit anymore, but we're not going to tell you how it's bad.
Yeah, that's a secret.
Yeah, big secret here. And we're going to cancel it. So I went down to my banker the next day, and I talked to her. She's a friend. We share dog tails, so to speak. And she says, well, damn, this doesn't make sense. We tried to figure it out. And as she was sitting there, a message came to her because she was in my file that said, Clayton's entitled to a new credit card with 15% interest.
No.
Yearly charge. I said, how kind of them.
Lovely.
You know, I think it was because I paid off my home equity loan with them.
As a matter of fact, I just got a solicitation to take out a credit card. But here's the fun part. They would be happy to give it to me as long as I gave them money up front to cover whatever it was that my credit limit was.
Oh, my God. In other words, just give us the money. Have it straight out there. Oh, I was going to tell you something about this thing in Wisconsin that people haven't been talking about. I think it's really important, first of all, that guy wanted to put disruptors and agents provocateurs out in the audience and start trouble that way. But another thing that's sort of sneaking by and nobody's noticing is in the law there's a portion that says that, gee, the local government's no longer going to be in charge of education. It'll be done by the governor's office. In other words, we'll no longer have school boards and things like that.
Oh.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that it's not in the other states. I mean, there's so much in these laws. There's some, what is it, 17 states have something going on right now?
Something along those lines, yes.
And I think you talked about Kasich the other night, a wonderful man that he is. because he almost wrecked Ohio's public employees' retirement system, one of the most solid in the United States throughout the country.
Well, I saw some numbers the other day, and like Wisconsin, and this goes back to what I was saying with Sandra Clayton, they keep suggesting, oh, there's a budget crisis. The public employees' pension system in Wisconsin, first of all, is not all that generous.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna go out and buy the new blue Buick on a Wisconsin public employee's pension, first. Second, in terms of actual stability, the Wisconsin public employees' retirement system ranks at or near the very top in the United States in terms of the degree to which it's funded. I mean, we've got unfunded liabilities in this state that are just breathtaking. But in Wisconsin, I think the public employees' retirement system is funded in excess of 90%.
One of the ways...
That's the cover of a Supertramp album. Crisis? What crisis?
Exactly. One of the ways they did it here in Ohio is that they, of course, make a contribution, and the employee makes a contribution.
Right.
Not a bad deal. Except, guess what? When you quit your job and go somewhere else, the money doesn't go with you.
Oh, no, it doesn't. You can transfer it into like a Roth IRA or something like that. But, no, it sits right there in the system. That's the same thing that happens here.
Then they continue to make money from it. And really all you have in it is what you contributed. That's assuming you quit, of course.
Right.
The other thing that I find interesting is that we had that judge in Pennsylvania. That's not the guy that was putting away kids for money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to think that's a broader picture than we're being painted.
Oh, you mean that the graft was far more extensive? I would tend to agree.
And in more states, not just Pennsylvania. I mean, that kind of stuff's going on everywhere. And I keep trying to think of it, but, you know, my mind isn't what it used to be. But I'm sure, get Sandra to do some research here, that this is happening somewhere else in the country, in other states. I'm not quite sure where, but seems to have happened in my mind. Now, the other thing that I wanted to bounce off of is I like the idea of peace, prosperity, and so forth.
Yeah, it beats the hell out of war and pillage and death. I mean, it really does.
But, the man says.
I was afraid there was one of those.
Yeah, if you look at our history, you know Rome better than I. And you know history probably better than I. But for the past 3,000 years, guess what gets us progress? It's been war. Weaponry. Mathematics was based upon weaponry of artillery and things like that. That's how
you first get geometry out of the desire to build things.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the pyramids or the ziggurats of Ur and Sumer and so forth. I don't know, and I'm not disagreeing, but I don't know if you can make that on a blanket statement that mathematics is a function of warfare, but it certainly plays its role.
It's a big relationship. Big relationship. Correlation, no. Relationship, yes.
Sure.
And I think that's what we're going through here, is a different kind of warfare, maybe class warfare. And I do think that one of the things we have to be concerned about is the well-being of our side.
Oh, sure, because the fact of the matter is, with all of our manufacturing potential having been shipped to China,
mm-hmm.
If we had a problem tomorrow like we got on December the 7th, 1941,
mm-hmm.
We'd be sitting ducks. Because even going back to before December 7th, 1941, we had been ramping up production as a result of the Lend-Lease Agreement with Great Britain.
That's right.
And that was what began putting people back to work out of the second Great Depression that happened in 1937, because Franklin Delano Roosevelt allowed himself to be talked into austerity measures by Henry Morgenthau. But the thing is, with World War II, we had a bunch of idle factories, and all we had to do was get people in them and fire them back up. Well, if we have a problem like that any time in the near future, we're screwed.
Absolutely.
Because much of the coal that we need to make steel, and I understand it can be made with natural gas. I understand. But traditionally, you make it with coal. Much of the coal that we would use to make steel is already gone. It's gone to Russia. It's gone to China. It's gone to India. The steel mills themselves, Clayton, they're just gone. Mm-hmm. They really are in China.
Literally. Literally. And you can go to places like Cleveland and Youngstown and Akron and Pittsburgh. You would never believe that they had anything to do with the manufacturing of steel.
Right. Or Birmingham.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying with that is that I think, based upon a lot of speculation, what I saw when I was in the banking industry, that we've just seen the head of this beast that we call a recession. This is not a recession. This is a beginning of a depression, and it's just deciding how deep it's going to go and how fast it's going to go. Because if you look around, yeah, the stock market's doing fine, but what's the stock market got to do with 90-95% of us? Nothing.
Next to nothing.
A little bit of
that's where you get these phrases like jobless recovery.
And
because Wall Street is going absolutely bananas. Main Street, not so much.
And if you look at the jobs that are coming back, they're 25% of the value of the ones that people lost. People are coming back to work. That 25% of what they were working at. You're lucky to get a job paying $15,000-$20,000. It's always in the service industry.
Right, and the same thing is going to happen if Snot Walker in Wisconsin gets his way. Because if he, as you've noted, gets the power of hire and fire, he'll get rid of the tenured teachers. And he'll hire people in at 17, 18, because there's not going to be any collective bargaining anymore. And so he'll hire teachers in at $16,000, $17,000 a year, ripe out of college, not a clue about what to do in a classroom.
Yep.
Wisconsin's exactly. Test scores will go through the floor, and then being a Republican, he'll look up and say, "Our public schools have failed." I mean, I've been to this dance, Clayton. You know what I mean?
Oh, haven't we all? And it's just amazing. We've got these kids; they're beautifully bright kids. I've been taking classes at Ohio State. And that's where I got my bachelor's. I did get my master's there. I got it up in Vermont.
Well, you know, we've got two or three Ohio State alums in the Horn family. Guy James comes to mind. There's you. There's Scott in Sweden.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you know, fine Big Ten institution. That beats the hell out of the academics at, say, University of Alabama, Tuscaloosa. I mean.
Yeah.
Where I had a cup of coffee.
I've been taking classes the last few years, sociological classes like the sociology of deviance being one. I thought I should know what I'm about.
Physician, know thyself.
That's right. Not this quarter, I'm taking one in the sociology of sexuality. Gee, after 67 years on this earth, I thought I needed to know something about that, too.
Figure out what you were doing wrong, finally?
Yeah, I did. I got involved with women. Just take care of it yourself. You're okay, man.
Oh, I'm going to get email.
I love them, but damn, I ought to just buy them that house and that car, give it to them, hate them immediately, and leave.
You cut out the cut out the middleman.
Yeah, cut out all that emotional stuff. And the thing that's amazing.
Thank God Agnes isn't listening right now.
Killing, huh?
No, okay. me. It'd be my fault. You know, if I speak in the forest and she's not there to hear me, am I still wrong? But, you know.
Yeah. Oh, God. She will kill you on that one. Yes, you are. These Kents are fantastic. I love them. I have them send me their papers so I can just take a look at what they're writing, what they're saying, what they're thinking. However, the structure of the university, I predicted in 1970 that this place is going to become a corporate center for training mid-level management. And the poorer students are going to be sent to Columbus State.
Well, I think you're right about that because, and I will take his name again in vain again, our dear friend Dr. Bill. He points out that nobody, and you know, he's head of the Beckley campus of Concord University, and there's a lot of kids who start out and do most of their college career there on that campus.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, very few people want to be historians. Very few people want to be philosophers. Very few people want to be English majors or teachers even. They want to be financial planners and financial advisors. In other words, they want to not actually do anything that contributes any overall good to the society. Because, you know, if you think, and God, I'm sure I've got a listener who's a financial planner who's going to write me a note and say, well, I'm never going to contribute to the program again, Bob. People who are like certified financial planners and stuff, they're kind of, you know, really good guessers.
That's right.
You know, they've got a good sense for being able to tell you how much of your stack to bury in the bond market versus how much to play aggressively versus how much to play conservatively. And well, you know, you're going to need some blue chip of Cogswell Cogs and that kind of stuff.
But there's not
a lot of advancing of the human condition in that. Oh well, I really am going to get email.
One of the reasons I went into sociology was because I wanted to help society, and that's what we did back in the late '60s.
Right.
70s, you know. We wanted to.
I ought to sit you down with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, because you know he has told me numerous times about the good intentions of people who go into, for instance, a social work degree.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Texas, where Rick is, he's told me you're going to make less as a social worker than you would make working at Taco Bell. And yet you're going to be staked with the very existential survival of the most fragile people in any given culture.
Exactly.
And doesn't that tell you everything you need to know about the priorities of this culture?
Right. And there's so few of us that go into psychology, teaching professions, sociology, social work, so forth, that it's getting less and less.
Yeah.
But the main point that I was going to bring out of that was that their experience is so superficial. I'm taking a 600-quarter course in sociology of sexuality, and it's not as wild as you might think it is. The only basic thing I found really amazing was that
there are no small furry animals grooving in a cave with a pict or anything.
That's right. There's a thing called the XYY chromosome that makes bikers and people that wind up in prison.
Right. What might have been called ultra violence in Clockwork Orange. Yeah.
And, you know, we know those people out there. They've always been out there. The other thing that we learned last week was people spank each other and pull hair. But we've got a gay guy teaching it, and he didn't realize that that's been going on with straight folks for centuries, you know?
Well, yeah, that goes back to the cave people.
Thank you.
Have you not gotten around to the people who like to dress up in animal costumes and do it?
Oh, yeah, we just talked about the plushies and furries. Oh, well, okay.
I got to learn to keep my mouth shut.
How do you know so much about this, Bob?
I'll never tell. God, wait a minute. Let me look here. Let me check the camera. Okay. My squirrel costume is out of the shot.
I'd like to be a chipmunk, frankly.
Well, no, actually, I do. I'm a dolphin.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, actually, I might be a Dalmatian if you... But it's, that's my guy, though, you know.
Speak, Clayton, speak!
Well, there's also some gay guys that are called bears.
All the, now see, we had Peter Godbold on here for a good long while, year and a half, and I learned all about the bears and yes.
Yeah, and the way a bear hits on you, as he sits down next to you, and goes woof. And it brought back a memory of when I was hanging out at Singles Bar, and I went to this one that I was going to do some swing dancing, and guy walked up next to me. Sits down and goes, oh, and I didn't think.
Oh, you weren't kidding. Okay, I didn't know that part. I didn't know about the barking.
Yeah, and this guy talked to me for quite a while, and you know, I didn't think anything of it other than we were talking. You know, an acquaintance, another acquaintance in life. And he took off and saw me talking to a friend of mine that stopped by and took off. He came back over and sat down next to me and says, I didn't know you were taken. I'm going, huh?
Pardon? Beg pardon? Excuse me? Yeah.
Thank you for what? I think I got to go home now.
I hear my mother calling. Right. Hey, Clayton, yeah. It's good to hear from you, brother. You have a good weekend.
Let me do one thing about it, though.
Sure.
Before we go here, is that I found that stuff that we're learning. It's appropriate, but it's superficial. And that's what they're getting. It's a superficial education. It'd be better off if they went into math and things like that.
Oh, there's our second toaster moment of the night.
Which one?
No, you've got the second toaster. Sandra got the first toaster.
Ah, yes,
yeah.
But and by the way, if I remember tomorrow, the check's in the mail.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
$50. Is that enough?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Right, no, it is.
Hey, that's we are getting ever closer. We may actually manage to finish out the month and meet our fundraising goal, which would be a beautiful thing.
Does that help? Does that help with the person that was matching?
Oh gosh, yes.
Okay, there's $100 then, isn't it?
Cool. Yeah. Well, she was only in it up to 200. Darlene was so. You will be whipped cream on the Sunday.
There, I want to be the cherry man.
Now, see, you're trying to get back into that abnormal psych, and I'm just not going to let you, Clayton.
You know how abnormal I am. All right, have a wonderful weekend, man.
All right, you take care. Bye now.
Scott Walker is going to fire 35,000, I heard, tonight, by the way.
Jesus. This is going to get interesting. Without a doubt, this is going to get interesting.
The new American Revolution.
It may very well be. All right. Take care, Clayton. Bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.
And let's see. About 8 minutes before the hour. But why stop? Let's keep going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is the horn observing us, or are
we observing
the horn?
Oh, it's Schrodinger's Bob.
Yes. I'm going to be the first person who says, I don't give a shit about a Ustream. Unless you're performing a Tom Waits art performance piece, then I'll care to watch, but, I mean...
Right.
To me, this is the problem with a lot of things regarding radio and talk shows. There needs to be more of a effort if people are going to travel in this way of making it where you actually utilize the screen, because... Again, what a lot of people do is they just look at you once and they go, okay, whatever. I mean, you could just put a still of you.
Well, let me give you my vision real quick as far as what going to video means. This is me just screwing around and having some fun.
Yeah.
If you can call me being on a television screen anything resembling fun.
Yeah.
I have a vision for what it means for the horn to go to video.
Mm.
What you're seeing right now ain't it. Because I think a static camera is about as interesting as watching bread rise, maybe less. But, on the other hand, if you can do it with a couple of different cameras,
mm-hmm.
and if you can, for instance, fire up Skype, and you can do a split screen with picture in picture, then it becomes interesting because then it becomes truly interactive. And, for instance, if I want to bring up the video of the people in Benghazi swaying and singing that inspiring song in Arabic, I can do that. But I'll tell you a little secret, David.
Yeah.
I have found out how much it costs to do that.
Yeah.
I found a gizmo. Now, I mean, I suppose there are ways where you can do it the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
But you're constantly fiddling, and I mean, this is more fiddling than I want to do. But to do it this way, the gizmo unit, and it's a beautiful pro unit, is $5,000. Now, with dead compressors here, and I don't know, maybe a dead preamp, and I don't know what caused the mic problem last week.
Mm.
$5,000 video units seem like they may as well be $5 million video units, and the only way I'm ever going to see it is if we, if I hit the lottery.
What's the additional overhead every month? Is it anything?
The way we're doing it, no.
Mm.
No, because we've got adequate upstream bandwidth to be able to take care of it, as long as I'm not I got a bunch of lines lit up. I'm sending a video stream, and I'm sending our audio stream, and it all seems to be working quite nicely.
Mm.
So I would like to have more bandwidth here.
Right.
And adding more bandwidth, I've found, would cost us about another $500 a month. But it's not absolutely critical.
Yeah.
But before the horn ever happened, I had the horn happening in my head.
Right.
It's kind of like Athena springing fully formed from the head of Zeus. Not that I'm Zeus or Athena, thank you. But I had an idea of where it would go. And to that extent, I have for several years now known what video would look like if we did it here and I did it the way I want to. For instance, I'm sitting here in my chair right now, and if I had my druthers, even for doing radio, I would much rather be standing up.
Mm.
But that entails entirely an entire separate set of questions for how that works and what that looks like. I mean, it could happen, but it would mean the one I've been thinking about lately is, this is purely fantasy, but you opened the door, so I'm gonna.
Yeah.
Because as long as I'm sweating every winter as to whether or not the roof's going to hold, and as long as the HVAC system remains dead, and as long as I'm still wrestling with the stinking water heater and fooling with needing new fixtures in the bathroom or what have you,
right?
Then doing what I want to do in terms of create a studio, and what I want to do there is I want to knock out the side wall of the studio here and build it out about another 12 feet and go backwards and create a big space where we can hang the green screen and have all kinds of fun. And then we'd be into some real honest-to-God Jed Clampett walking around money.
Right. Well, that may come sooner than you think because as we travel downward, more people will want to reach out to keep the infrastructure alive. We always seem to come at the last minute or the last few seconds on the shot clock.
This month is another case in point, David, because to be able to say we started 2011 in the black 2 months in a row.
Right.
Has that ever happened?
I don't think so. I've not been a witness to that. But that's good news to hear. And I do have a name for Scott Walker.
Yes?
I call him Bot Stalker.
Because
he's bought and paid for, and he's stalking Wisconsin people.
Bot Stalker.
Yeah. The thing to remember about Wisconsin, and this is something that a lot of people are forgetting to talk about, and it goes right back to our issues of voting issues, is that if you look at the totals for Scott Walker and his opponent, very, very, very slim margin, Bob. Very slim margin. And probably a lot of issues with caging were involved for Scott Walker to get this.
Oh, yeah.
So I think a lot of people, I think it's like 80,000 or something like that, something really, really slim. So, I mean, as soon as I saw the margin of that, I was like, oh, I know why this guy got it.
Well, and you
got
to wonder how many, and Brad Friedman could answer this question, of
course. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, how many touchscreen machines were at work?
Yeah. So I wanted to center the issues around Wisconsin and the portrayal of the media. And one of the things that you may be interested in, I don't know if you you talked about it, but what did you think of the did you see any of the YouTube footage of Daily Show bringing the camel to Wisconsin? Or did you hear about that?
Yeah, well, I heard about it, and I saw a little clip after the fact.
Yeah.
God, I don't want to be a party pooper or anything, but I thought that was too cute by half. It felt like mockery. The people on those camels in Egypt were beating the snot out of human beings. Now, I mean, I made jokes about it. I said, well, you know, Scott Walker's trying to figure out how he's going to get camels.
Mm-hmm.
But to take it to the next level and actually bring one there, what that was actually a mockery, if you think about it.
Yeah.
It was a mockery of those statements of solidarity that had been sent from Egypt to Wisconsin.
Right. Well, here's my take on it. I don't know if you saw, did you see the footage of the fallen camel? Where they were putting him in the truck.
No.
Okay, that's the part of the equation that's being left out of the story, ladies and gentlemen, which is when you bring a camel to a place like Wisconsin in winter, you know, it doesn't quite work. You can't quite stand on the snow and ice. And guess what happens? Do you know what happens?
Tell me they had to euthanize the camel.
No, I don't know what they had to do, but what I'm saying is a lot of people in this video, they were shocked that somebody, you know, it's sort of like what you were talking about with Sandra about the jets going overhead. And I read that story too. And that's like, you know, here's the thing, Bob. You could bring a stuffed toy camel and people would think that was funny, but to actually go out and to actually make the connection of saying, I'm going to get a camel and bring it to Wisconsin, and not realize the implications and the risks and the consequences of bringing out an animal to Wisconsin in wintertime, it's a serious disconnect.
Well, but it's the same disconnect, isn't it, David?
Yeah.
That happens when you say, hey, we're going to have a rally with 100,000 people, and it's going to be the Seinfeld rally, and it's not going to be about anything. The week before an election, upon which the future of the nation turns.
And you use
your bully pulpit at that rally to say, both sides are bad.
Oh.
I'm still not over that, David. I'm still not okay with it.
You would be happy to hear that someone took him to task, a liberal radio host took him to task this week on his coverage of Wisconsin. Because what Stewart was doing was he was mocking the Democrats for fleeing, and he was leaving out part of the story, and he was basically making an implication that they were cowards. And people in Wisconsin they had a huge problem with that, because when you put together the narrative of the Democrats fleeing and without giving like the whole story to the public, yeah, it's funny in that context.
Right.
But when it's out of context, it's
not so much.
Yeah, not so much. And I guess that's part of the problem with someone like Jon Stewart. Is he's from his high up above his ivory tower?
Just remember who his brother is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not like John's not in the loop.
Right.
And God, I'll probably get hate mail again over there. I just love Jon Stewart. You know, I do too. There's a lot of cute, there's a lot of funny, but I always took him at his word that it was fake news.
Yeah, I.
But there are a lot of people out there that treat him like a real journalist. I mean, you've seen that polling data, right, David?
Right, right.
Where he's more, you know, he's the modern day Walter Cronkite. He's more trusted than Brian Williams or any of the goons on Radio Rwanda, or you know.
I thought the most surreal thing involving Stewart was that I saw the uncut interview with Donald Rumsfeld. Jesus.
That I didn't have time for, but I did hear the part where. Let me just start by saying apology accepted. And see, but I want to be clear here, David.
Yeah.
Because it's manifested on this program. I don't do many guests from our side of the aisle.
Right.
And I don't do any from theirs. And I don't, you know, what point does it serve? And maybe someone far more educated and erudite than you or I put together.
Mm-hmm.
Can explain it, but what point does it serve to bring the Rumsfeld on? And you know, Sandra just said it. Jon Stewart is a neoliberal. You know, he believes in that globalism garbage.
Mm. Well, I would have liked to see Stewart. It would never happen, but it would have been funny nonetheless. I just like to start with and then put some handcuffs on the table. Citizen's arrest.
Yeah, see, that would have had some resonance.
Yeah, that would have been funny.
Or bring out Samantha Bee in a code pink T-shirt. That would have been funny.
So
because that evil old bastard might have just died when he saw a code pink T-shirt.
So while we're on that topic, Bob, because I haven't heard you mention anything on this, and I just want to get your take on it. What did you think of the David Letterman and Rumsfeld appearance?
That I didn't see.
Let me see if I can wrap my mind around what I witnessed. Well, first of all, it was a surreal moment where Donald Rumsfeld came out on the Letterman stage, and they started talking about different. They opened up with the differences between different farm animals and mules and a donkey, and they spent 2 minutes on that. But here's the interesting thing to me, is that Letterman. When he was talking about the presidents, and he must have got a note or someone must have tapped him on the shoulder, they ran through the different presidents, and they stopped at Jimmy Carter, and they didn't talk about Reagan, and they didn't talk about Bush. And it was like he did not want to touch that. He had Rumsfeld on the stage. He could have asked him about it, but...
But, you know, I'm a lot less likely to be critical of Letterman than I am Stewart, frankly.
Oh, I understand.
Because I think Letterman is a lot more intellectually honest about these things. I saw a one-liner. I think I saw it quoted over at Bart Cop.
Yeah.
But I saw a one-liner from Letterman about Libya, where he said the people of Libya are going to overthrow Muammar Gaddafi. The problem is he'll be replaced by his idiot son Muammar W. Gaddafi. And I about ruptured my spleen on that. God, I laughed out loud because it was just funny, and it left, and the audience just went wild. But then again, it's a New York City audience, so you know maybe that's no barometer. Again, I go back to my primary thesis.
Yeah.
What's the point in having an old war criminal on your program? What does it do? Because it's going to be done, it has to be done in such a way that he's not going to be made out to be the war criminal that he is.
Right, right.
It's not like me having him on here and just screaming at him until he hangs up. or turning Malloy loose on him, or Rick Smith, or any other so-called... hardcore liberal interviewer. It's not like that. It's gonna be circus television, isn't it?
Yeah,
is it good for ratings? I mean, did John Stewart get great numbers because he had the known gnomes and unknown gnomes on the program?
I think it was like a good water cooler conversation for the next day. That's what I think the purpose of Rumsfeld served.
Well, in that case, then I adopt a statement that was made on the cruise a couple of weeks back, and that is that we are entertaining ourselves to death. Amusing ourselves to death. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Cue that song. I think that is you know, this goes back to what I was telling you about how we are right on the cusp of having a reality show president, where a president has at least four seasons of a reality show, and it goes out on DVD, and then everybody knows him, and then when it comes to the election time, it's like, I can't
and
believe
you can,
he's
you know,
running
you,
for president.
Right, you can go back to the Lewinsky scandal for the genesis of all of that, but then it becomes you know, fully flowered in the W administration, and now it's in the extension of that metaphor, now it's just MASH.
Right.
You know, now everybody just watches it. But you mentioned 4 years, 8 years, whatever.
Yeah.
I was having a conversation the other day. The more I sit down and think about it, the more I am convinced that that if we had any sense about us whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying this because there's a titular Democrat, and emphasis on the word titular, in the White House. I would say this if it was Ronald Reagan's presidency. I would say it if it was George H.W. Bush's or George W. Bush's presidency.
Right.
If we are ever going to get to the place where we can fix the problems that exist in this country, we simply must, and because there's a lot of this kind of talk going around, Rand Paul wants a constitutional convention, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
We simply must repeal the constitutional amendment that imposed term limits on the presidency.
Yeah.
Remember, that was imposed as a function of right-wing spite against FDR. But the fact of the matter is, very few are the presidents who could survive a third term, let alone have an FDR-style presidency. And it killed FDR. But the fact of the matter is, we're trapped in this cycle, David, where the guy has to bust, or woman, has to bust his or her ass to get elected to the first term. Then they've got a year. And then in year two, they have to stop really doing anything and go into stasis. And then in year three, the proto-campaign ramps up. And in year four, it goes into you know, full-on overdrive. And then if he gets or she gets reelected, then it's legacy time. And as long as that model prevails in America, the executive branch will never be able to do what the executive branch was designed by the framers of the Constitution to do.
Well, that's why the 2012 election, because we have so much disinformation, we have so much propaganda spewed like we've never had before in this world of 24/7 hypermedia that we live in. What the 2012 campaign for Obama is going to be like in terms of just everything that is out there, I don't think they... You know, the issue of the whole birth certificate thing, I think people underestimate that. You know,
you know what? I mean, you know, here it is. It's February of 2011. I had an email forwarded to me the other day, David, that said, here it is. And it was the alleged Kenyan birth certificate of Barack Hussein Obama that was disproven. You know, 3 years ago, four, that was an entirely dummied up inside job of one of those right-wing freaks whose name escapes me, thank God, merciful God. But it's still making the rounds.
Exactly, and I mean
do you remember the show, and maybe you were listening, maybe you weren't, where we were talking about that tired old joke and Roseanne Cash got pissed off. Because
right.
Boner or somebody was going around telling the joke that says, remember back during the days of Reagan, we had Bob Hope and Johnny Cash, and now Barack Obama's come along, and we've got no hope and no cash. heard and came out and said, you know, quit trying to make political points on dead daddy's back.
Yeah.
I was standing down in the local Rippy Mart the other night when I heard a local yokel tell that joke. So what you're saying is absolutely true. The birthers, the deathers, the tenthers, the thirteenthers, fourteenthers, the booger eaters, baggers, they are far more prevalent in our society than I think even polling data indicates. Now, I'll balance that, David, by saying I still think Barack Obama is going to be reelected in 2012 because, and let me make this, you know, big bold letters crystal clear, put it in Times Square, the Republicans don't want it. Maybe individual Republican egos want the presidency, but yeah, the Republican Party as a monolith does not want the presidency, A, because Barack Obama is doing just fine by them, and B, they recognize it's going to take a while with all this belt tightening and riding our ass to put some money back in the Treasury for them and preferably Jebby to come and steal in 2016, because that's the way the dodge works now. And we go back, history much better than I do. Didn't we have certain bans in place for doing business with the Soviet Union at that time? Is this a little bit like the George Bush family doing business with the Third Reich? And, you know, I remember Prescott Bush ultimately got busted about 1942 under the Trading with the Enemy Act?
Well, I don't know how rigidly those bans were enforced. But if you want to do business with anybody in this country, you can find a way around to do it.
Well, sure. I mean, we know that in the modern world because of all the good, upstanding, God-fearing, right-wing Christian corporations that fell all over themselves to do business in Iran. The one that comes to mind, of course, being Halliburton.
Well, these people were doing business with a man who was killing his own people, millions by the millions, and yeah, the Soviet Union lost, or Russia lost, between 1914 and 1945, 50 million people.
Yes.
Half of those were done under the excesses of building socialism in one country. And
the horrors went on after the Second World War under the Stalin purges, right?
Well, the Stalin purges were basically before World War II.
But I mean, they continued after the Second World War, did they not?
Was going to have a what they call the doctor's purge, and he died during that time. Yeah, he was planning another purge, absolutely. But the major casualties were suffered under the Stalin era before World War II.
God Almighty.
And, of course, because of Stalin's ineptitude and realizing that he had made a bankrupt deal with Hitler and he had killed off all of his army or anyone who opposed him.
Well, you know, what strikes me as frustrating.
Prepared that Hitler was able to roll all over them. And, you know, I mean, Stalin killed most of his general staff.
Right.
He killed anybody, and you didn't have to. Well, I mean, for example, if you had a newspaper on a table and there was a picture of Stalin on it and somebody happened to put a glass of tea down on top of it.
You were a dead man.
You were, absolutely. But the Koch family, you know, their evil goes back very, very far. And that's the reason I mentioned this the other night on the TV program, on your program.
But what frustrates me, Jim, is that is important investigative journalism. Wouldn't you agree?
What do you mean, Bob?
This story that you're talking about. That's an important piece of reporting.
Well, it's history. It's right there. It's in the books.
And yet, it's never going to show up where, in any place where even half of the country could become aware of it. Now, Glenn Beck has a couple of million brain-dead people convinced that George Soros is out to eat babies. But the Koch brothers, who really, really do mean ill to this country, they know nothing about. And that drives me a little bit crazy, Jim.
No, they don't. Not at all.
And amusing themselves to death again, like we were talking with David about.
It goes on to say, the comrades were good to the coach. Today, Coach Industries has grown into the second largest private company in America. With an annual revenue of $100 billion, the company has was just $6.3 billion shy of first place in 2008. Ownership is kept strictly in the family, with the company being split roughly between the right-wing brothers, Charles David Koch, who are worth about $20 billion apiece, and are infamous as the largest sponsors of right-wing causes. They bankroll scores of free market and libertarian think tanks, institutes, and advocacy groups. Reason Magazine, Heritage Foundation, and the Cato Institute are just a few of the Koch-backed free market operations. Greenpeace estimates that the Koch family shelled out $25 million from 2005 to 2008, funding the climate denial machine, which means they outspent ExxonMobil 3-1.
And you know what? Here's the real booby prize in this whole story. We pay him to do it. We pay them to do it, Jim, because all of those donations, whether it's the American Enterprise Institute, the Cato Institute, the Heritage Foundation, the climate denying outfit, Americans for Prosperity, every last one of those, Jim, is a 501c3. And as a 501c3, contributions to them are tax deductible. So we are paying the Koch brothers to support the dismantling of this country.
Well, you know, this stuff is not really that well hidden, because the headline on this is called The Exile, or The Exile. And it says, Vanity Fair promotes The Exile. Gutsy, visceral, serious journalism, abusive, defamatory, poignant, paranoid, and right. And it banner headline says, A People's History of the Koch Industries, How Stalin Funded the Tea Party Movement. Yasha Levine.
Wow.
All you have to do is just punch up Koch stroke Stalin. And it's right there. And why this has not emerged, I don't know. Why the media has not mentioned this, I can probably tell you, but it's right there on the Internet. And they sure as hell don't want people to realize that. Of course, half the people in this country, if you ask them who Joseph Stalin was and what he did, couldn't tell you.
Couldn't tell you.
And I know a guy who's a so-called left-wing admirer of so many causes, and that idiot has a bust of Stalin in his home.
Yeah, well, that's a dictator too far for me.
Well, I mean, when I saw it, I said, do you realize what this man did? And this guy had actually gone to Russia and had actually gone to some type of Soviet-sponsored thing. And, of course, none of that was mentioned, the abuses of Stalin and what he did. And it took Khrushchev on 22nd February 1956 in his secret speech to begin to detail the crimes of Stalin and all the people who were in bed with him.
In a way, it was a little miracle that Khrushchev survived to do that. And, of course, he got taken down in short order.
Well, Khrushchev was the person who said, when Stalin says dance, the wise man dances. But, you know, Khrushchev was one of Stalin's henchmen. Of course, Stalin commissioned him to build the Moscow Metro and also to go ahead and command the Stalingrad Offensive when Hitler was almost on the verge of taking Stalin's namesake city.
That's the answer, yes.
But nonetheless, Khrushchev realized himself, this old Ukrainian peasant, that in his secret speech of that date, of 22nd February of 56, how it would be necessary to begin a type of fall in spite of his other things that he did. That was one thing Khrushchev did do, was to, I guess he was trying to, exonerate himself from part of it, because he knew it was going to come out. of how much the Soviet people had suffered under the regime of Joseph Stalin. And yet these people in Wisconsin, the Koch brothers, were glad to do business with him and were glad to accept any type of help that they could provide.
Well, when you're talking about the kind of class of people that you're describing in the Koch brothers, Jim, there is only one question. It has nothing to do with ethics or morals or anything. There's only one question they ask, and it doesn't matter whether the denomination is dollars or rubles or drachmai or lira or any of those other old currencies. There's only one question. Did the check clear?
Well, sure.
And once the answer is yes, game on.
Well, see, they have no sense of morality. They have no sense of decency. And they have no sense of propriety.
You know, I remember during the Clinton administration when we thought that Richard Mellon Scaife was the absolute devil. And the fact of the matter is, he was an opening act. He was lover boy opening before ZZ Top. Because the Koch brothers, ultimately, yeah, they're vicious. They are truly vicious.
I mean, for them to spend three times the amount to deny global warming that ExxonMobil did, that ought to tell you something.
Well, does it say anywhere how that figure compares, Jim, with the amount spent by our side to try to convince people that it is, that they're actually living in reality?
No, no.
Because if you were doing it in a bar graph, you wouldn't be able to see. You'd need a magnifying glass to see our side compared to the size of the bar of the right wing's expenditures in getting people to think that it's all some sort of liberal hoax to get us all driving electric cars. God, it gives you a little glimpse of how hard the job ahead truly is, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, and that's the reason I wanted to share that with you and to footnote basically what I said a couple nights ago.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up then, and I'm glad you followed up with some of it tonight. I really am.
Well, I tried to, and as far as going back to that Pentagon NASCAR thing, you know, that's being used as a retention tool. Or an acquisition to, or an accession to, as it's referred to.
But you know, does it not matter that? And I'm not that up on my NASCAR, but does it not matter that that car chases the pack every blessed week? Does the Army car ever win?
Oh, I don't know. I don't watch NASCAR. That is the most boring thing in the world, to watch a bunch of people run around a track. I mean, I have better things to do with my time. I guess I would not have been a very good Roman citizen because you would not have found me in the Circus Maximus, I can tell you that.
No, you would have been long gone, and you'd have been in the stacks of the library at Alexandria.
I hope before they burned it down. <You know? laughs> I mean NASCAR and,
I know you take rather a dim view of sport in general, but you and I are on the same page where NASCAR is concerned.
Yeah, well, you know, I enjoy the Olympics every 4 years, and I've talked about that before, but when I look at some of the sports in this country, and I basically think they're bred in circuses, and these people in the National Football League are being paid what they're being paid, and how they've become icons and things of this nature, when in modern-day Russia, they accord the same status to their poets and writers.
Well, but by the same token, the Soviets also accorded high social status to their weightlifters and their hockey players as well.
Oh yeah, that they did too. Of course, that was one of the things that they did.
But you mentioned the Olympics, and one of the things that Frank DeFord said the other morning on National Public Radio that I found quite intriguing. He said, "You know, at the Olympics, at the opening of the Olympics, they released doves."
Yes, they do.
At the opening of a football game, we fly bomber jets over.
Yeah.
For about the next 5, 10, 15 miles going up the interstate, I was thinking, yeah, well, I chewed on that one a little bit, Jim, because this is a militaristic state.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean,
I think DeFord was also right in saying, can you imagine having to stand up and sing the national anthem before Swan Lake?
No, I could not. No, I couldn't. But like I say, the Olympics are very special for me, and one of the most interesting period of the Olympic history was the 11th Olympiad held in Berlin in 1936, and what propaganda use the National Socialist Party of Adolf Hitler made of that. But you know, Bob, if you go back to Berlin today, and I was in Berlin in, oh God, when was it? Late 60s? The stadium was still there.
Oh, well, it was a damn fine stadium, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, the Olympic bell was there. I saw that. There was a hole through it that had been punched in it by Soviet artillery. And on that bell was, I summon the youth of the world.
They didn't know how to put on a show.
And to
didn't Lainey, and we're kind of going inside baseball and a bit far afield, but didn't Lainey Riefenstahl have a little bit to do with the staging of the 36 Olympics?
Absolutely. I mean, Olympia is one of her finest works, and I mean, she had special railroad tracks built by the runners, lanes, and things of that nature, and it was just it's an incredible movie. It surpassed only, or I think it surpassed, as Triumph of the Will.
I've seen Triumph of the Will. I've never seen Olympia.
But you know, I just thought how strange events turned from 1936, from a beautiful city like Berlin hosting the Olympics, and to what that city looked like in 1946.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
It was a beautiful city.
The mind reels. But nonetheless, we have gone far, far afield here. But it just shows how quickly things can change in the twinkling of an eye and what can happen.
Indeed. Indeed.
Listen, have a good weekend.
All right. You too, Jim. Take care. Right. Bye now. There's always a good history lesson and some dot connecting to be had whenever Jim calls in. 25 minutes before the hour, I just got an email in, and I'm going to go right back to the phones in a second, but I just got this in from Jack down in Shreveport. You know, I mention frequently our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne. And apparently, Matt will be live in Nashville on something called Nomad Radio tomorrow morning. Robert Abston says, I just got off the phone with Matt Osborne of the Osborne Inc. blog. Matt will be in Nashville tomorrow covering the Nashville event that is part of the National MoveOn.org Day of Action in support of workers across America. Matt will be calling into our webcast as soon as he arrives in Nashville, and will be available as events dictate throughout the day. The official activities are scheduled for noon Central Time, but we expect to hear from Matt earlier to let us know how things are shaping up. I encourage you all to tune your internet connections to newspatriots.com/live.ogg. I imagine you can find it if you just go to newspatriots.com to catch Matt live from Nashville. So if you want to hear, because I've mentioned it, well, I mentioned it in my conversation with Matt the other night. The real pants wetter for the right wing is, what if this stuff spreads down south? And that scares the daylights out of the right wing. The idea that folks, black and white alike, might decide to get a little, you know, working folks might decide to get a little uppity and get off the plantation, so to speak. And I don't mind using that image. Well, Scott Walker may go from hero to zero in a real hurry if these little bits of tinder catch. What's this, Sparky? Scott Walker asked to leave local restaurant? Now, that's interesting. From a blog called Mind Stain, M-I-N-D-S-T-A-I-N. You know you're not well-liked when you're asked to leave a local tavern because people booing at you causes an upset. But this is exactly what happened to Wisconsin State Governor Snot Walker on Friday, the 18th of February. The Merchant in Madison, Wisconsin, confirms that on Friday night, Patrick Sweeney, one of the owners, politely asked Scott Walker to leave the establishment when other customers began booing him. A bartender at the Merchant said his presence was causing a disturbance to the other customers and management asked him to leave. That's beautiful. Now, like I said, he may go from hero to zero in a damn hurry. The name of the bar again in Madison, Wisconsin is The Merchant. The Merchant. Website merchantmadison.com. And you know what? If you want to contact him, send him an email or whatever, drop him a phone call, just say, hey, thanks. Thanks for throwing that right-wing piece of crap out of what looks to be an otherwise lovely, lovely bar. You know, nobody does bars like Wisconsin does bars and taverns. Very, very civilized approach to potent potables in that lovely state. I can't wait until, July when it gets warm there. Maybe I'll go visit. See, I'm just playing. Hey, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Tony. What's up?
I'm good. How's your day going? Good?
Oh, we're having great fun tonight.
Hey, you know, hang on a second. Sorry, I had to cough. Hey, you know,
You know, I've got a button for that. You don't, but that's okay.
Sorry about that. You know, he was talking about Berlin and Hitler and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And you were talking about sports. I remember going back and watching the old films on the Olympics and how Jesse Owens just smoked them all.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, when Hitler talked about how, when Ruhlis fought Max Schmeling in the rematch and Hitler flew him back to Germany after he beat him the first time, and Hitler said that there's no way an Aryan could lose to a black man, and Ruhlis destroyed him. All these right-wingers and all these guys, they always make these huge claims, and When we get our backs against the wall, something always happens to show the world, you know, that we are the right and they are wrong. It's funny how that works.
You know, it's one of those moments where, you know how I feel about religion generally, Tony, but one of those moments where you really are challenged to not at least hope against hope that there is karma to be worked out.
Oh, absolutely. And then, if you think about after what Joe Lewis did, if you think of the way the government treated him, and those were mostly rich white Republicans, and who's to say that they weren't trying to get revenge for what he did? The way they treated Joe Lewis was a crime. You know what I mean? I mean, they stripped him all his money, said he owed taxes. You know, the guy went to the army and he did all this stuff, and these rich fat cats, you know, they probably were pissed off because what he did, and how he embarrassed Hitler and all those people, you know? But anyway, you were talking about the Koch brothers and the amount of money they had.
Yeah.
Okay. To me, I think the Koch brothers are like, in a way, like Vegas, and I'll tell you why. The reason why most people, when they come to Vegas and they lose, is because these casinos have an unlimited amount of money, and the people that come here don't. So eventually, the people that come here are going to run out of money.
Well, yeah, and not just that. I mean, if you're playing. If you're playing roulette, if you're playing almost any game except blackjack, there's the odds are so thoroughly against you that it's almost impossible to win.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right about that. But it does help when you have an endless amount of money, and you know the money they throw out, they could just use it as a tax write-off or something, and they keep these things going. They understand the power of media, so. They're not afraid to just
right. And even if you do manage to win, you're gonna spend it going to a show, going to dinner,
yeah.
It's Vegas.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask you something about Stewart?
Sure.
Okay.
Not that I necessarily know anything, but yeah, go ahead.
A couple of things. Who's his brother?
Chairman of the New York Stock Exchange or something?
No, really?
Yeah, really.
Wow, well, that, there you go. And secondly, here's what ticks me off about not ticks me off, but, you know, Stewart was sitting up there, and he said all these things about the Bush administration, and he had Rumsfeld on there, and it seemed like he was asking for permission to ask him hard questions. I'll tell you this much, right? Here's why we lose. When Sean Hannity's out there and he's interviewing somebody on our side, he takes the glove off. He's ruthless. He'll say anything, and he doesn't apologize for it. He gets in their face. He cuts them off. But when we talk to people and we ask them hard questions, we ask them from a point of view like, would you mind if I ask you this? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why we lose, because if you look at Hannity, and I'm telling you right now, if he was ever had, Obama's not stupid. If Hannity ever had Obama on there, he always talks about respect in the office, but he would be completely
different. No, he'd be all over him like a cheap suit. And yeah, John Stewart's brother is Larry Leibovitz.
Okay.
And at present, he is chief operating officer of the New York Stock Exchange.
Wow. Wow. So that seems like a little bit of a conflict of interest.
Well, not really. I mean, I don't think it's a conflict of interest, but it certainly does sort of lend confirmation to what Sandra noted, that, you know, Stewart is probably a neoliberal.
Yeah. But I think...
Oh, by the way, as a postscript, Jim just added by way of email, Tony... Joe Lewis died penniless. Max Schmeling became rich as a spokesman for Coca-Cola.
Can you imagine that? I mean, he gave away millions of dollars in his career when he signed up to join the Army. And he went around pushing morale on people, and he beat back. You know, remember how they ended the phrase? You know, it was tyranny against the American way, and even the president had Lewis to the White House and all that stuff, and then he died penniless. It's disgusting the way they treated him. I mean, really? Just... I don't know. It just doesn't make sense.
I know.
But getting back to what we're talking about, we need a guy. I mean, I hate to say this, not like him, but we need a person that will get in the face of these people the way Hannity does, because that's why until we get guys that are not, like when Rumsfeld went on there, Stewart was like, he almost looked like he was not bowing, but he looked like he swung down a little bit. He was like he was afraid to ask him questions. I mean, it was just...
Well, you know, Rumsfeld probably still has the power to disappear him. Now, who wants to be waterboarded?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but you understand what I mean.
Sure, sure I do.
I mean, you see it all the time. Anytime that they go on the other, you know, radio wand, like you say, then they get hammered. But we don't treat them like that. We treat them with respect. We need to start getting in their face a little bit. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but who knows? You were talking about how, like, money and stuff, and I told you this before. One of the other reasons why we lose out is because If you might be rich, you might make a million, or you might make 2 million, but if you're going to make the kind of money that Koch brothers make, you got to be ruthless. You got to be, if you want to make Cheney money or Koch brothers.
That's exactly right, Tony. Because and it goes back to that quote I read from Raymond Chandler from Farewell My Lovely last week, where he said nobody makes $100 million without getting his hands dirty.
You're damn right. In order for you to make that kind of cash, you have to be completely ruthless. There's no other way about it. Those Koch guys, they knew what they were doing when they hooked up with others, and they knew what.
Well, remember, but they didn't. But remember the import of what Jim was talking about. They didn't make their money; they inherited their money. The money was made doing business with Stalin.
How come when they're on these right wing places, how come nobody ever asks them about that? You see what I mean?
Well, sure, but I mean, you want to, and things flow out of other things. After all of that, after they do business with Stalin and so forth, well, along comes the Koch brothers' daddy, who most assuredly knows what the history and legacy is. And what does he do, Tony? He provides the backing money for the founding of the John Birch Society, the most rabid, the just crazier than a sprayed roach, anti-communist organization that this country's ever known. Which has, in this era, morphed into the teabaggers, okay? And they do that, you know, it's no accident. It's cover, for God's sakes. It's cover. You know, the Bushes, the Prescott Bush actively did business financing the Nazis. He was the banker to a guy named Fritz Thyssen, who was called Hitler's angel, who was involved in the manufacture of the Zyklon B that was used in the death camps.
Can you imagine?
So necessarily the Bushes have to go around waving flags all the time. The reason, I mean, George H.W. Bush, the guy that Bartkop refers to as George Herbert Herbert Bush, if you know your Star Trek.
Yeah, sure.
He was one of the youngest pilots in Navy history in the Second World War. And the reason that he was given special admission to the Naval Flight Officer Training Program, and I have a relative who went through flight school with him, the reason he was given that position so young was to take the stain off of his daddy, who had been actively doing business with Hitler.
Not what you know, it's who you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But this is how Republicans are.
If you
do not as you know, it's all do as I say and not as I do. You know, there's old Ronald Reagan, for God's sakes. We do not do business. We do not negotiate with terrorists. Remember that?
I remember that. Absolutely, I remember that.
He said that at the same time that they were negotiating with terrorists.
And explain to me this. How does he get away with saying, the facts say I did, in my heart I know I didn't? How do you get away with saying that?
Well, the way you get away with saying that is by having a complacent, disinterested, bought-out media. It was during the blossoming of the Iran-Contra affair, which should have resulted in the criminal prosecution of Ronald Reagan.
And Oliver North.
And Oliver North and that whole filthy crowd. It was during the Iran-Contra affair that Katherine Graham of the Washington Post declared America cannot tolerate another Watergate. The Constitution, I think, was what she said. The Constitution cannot stand another Watergate. When in point of fact, the history now tells us that the thing that America could not stand was to not have another Watergate.
Did you hear George Carlin's routine about how many people from the Reagan administration were in jail or brought up on charges?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Was that great or what?
Oh, well, I miss George Carlin. I miss Hunter Thompson. God knows I miss Bill Hicks.
I was watching
I think Bill Hicks' birthday celebration is what, tomorrow?
Maybe. I don't know too much about him, but I was watching stuff.
Oh, Tony, when you get a little time, you need to just sit down at your computer, type Bill Hicks into the search bar at YouTube, and spend an hour or three.
I definitely will. Thanks for the advice. I will. You know who Paul Mooney is, right?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
He's great, too. Couple more things, and I'll let you go. If you got a show on MSNBC, and you had those...
Don't even ask, because there would have to be plastic surgery involved, and I'm just not down with that.
I mean, okay, a radio show or something. Would you go after those guys? I mean, I know you would. Would you?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, yeah. Two more things. Gingrich said today that if Palin... Oh, before I go on to this, can you imagine how much the right wing would freak out if Obama's mother had any, even like, got waited on by Hitler's daughter? I mean, they would freak out. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You
know, right.
Yeah. Anyway, Gingrich said today that if Palin took the actions that Obama did, there would be calls for impeachment, and whatever that means. I have no idea what.
But the day before, he explained that that the reason he has no problem talking about the sanctity of marriage after having cheated on two wives and maybe three or whatever, he said, "Well, I do that because I can do that because I believe in a just and forgiving God, and I am not perfect, just forgiven. And if the American people want to talk about that, well, whatever. But if the American people want to talk about saving America, I'm the man to talk to about it."
That guy has...
I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican.
That guy has major league cojones, man. I'm telling you, he really...
No, he has major league psychosis, Tony.
He has no shame, though. He absolutely has no shame whatsoever.
Sociopaths have no shame.
Yeah. One more thing. I don't want to sound like I'm beating the dead horse, but it looks like Gaddafi's firing on the protesters.
Oh, I know. All day long.
That is not really good. Anyway. Well, anyway, Bob, hope you have a great weekend.
And you too. You too, Tony. Stay safe, my friend.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Tony goes up and down the crazy streets and all around Vegas. If ever I find myself in need of a ride in Vegas, I know who I'm calling on. If you're in Vegas and you get a ride with Tony, you're a lucky human being. It's about 7 minutes before the hour. I got four blinking lights. We will put them over to Monday, if that's okay. All of you on hold, come back Monday, pretty please. Because I don't think there's time to get all four in, and I'm not going to get one and leave three hanging. Wow, what a conversation we've had tonight. And so many other stories, I guess, to save till Monday. Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm just going to have to fill a Bobster one of these days. Get some of this stuff out of the way. But thank you all. Thank you for meeting Darlene's challenge contribution. With that, as I said, you have gotten us within $400. Actually, now $360. You've gotten us within, $310. Thinking about what Clayton said. You've gotten us within $310 of meeting February's fundraising goal. Are there 31 people who can put us over the top? 31 people, 10 bucks each, we're over the top. That's mind-boggling. Thank you all of you for getting us so close. And remember, we've got till Monday midnight. I think we can do this. 2 months in a row that the Horn has met its fundraising goal. I don't think it's ever happened. So 2011, for all the weirdness, is at least financially off to a good start for the Horn. Isn't that cool? Thanks to Lottie, our moderator in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Matt Osborne. Check him out tomorrow. Just back up the podcast or whatever to hear the address again. Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, our Southeast correspondent. Thanks to Reverbo, our op-ed columnist. Thanks to John Fox, who was Pert and I pulling out hair last night as we were being crashed by the malicious bastards, whoever they are, who crashed us. And to who stayed at his post nonetheless. And thanks to Ben Birch, who put in extra hours, who works a real job. And when he has to do that sort of thing, it takes a toll. Thanks to Ben Birch for the time it took to update OSs and put in security fixes. Wow. All of this because we share a common vision of independent media that permits us ordinary people. And I'm probably more ordinary than anybody else around here. That gives us ordinary people an opportunity to carry on a conversation we could not otherwise have. Wow. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. We are ramping up our opposition to that coal company from India that means to destroy our homes here. And having folks as brave and dedicated as those at Coal River Mountain Watch involved means we've got a shot at success. crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. Y'all have a great weekend. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
please. When I need some Monday, I know just what I'll do.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and W.